It is my privilege to welcome to these microphones at the Line of Fire today my guest hosts, Dr. Alex McFarland and Jason Jimenez.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, folks, glad that you guys are here on the show, The Line of Fire. I am not, obviously, Dr. Michael Brown. My name is Jason Jimenez, and I will be shortly joined with my colleague and friend, Dr. Alex McFarland, who actually right now is doing an interview with Janet Mefford. So I'll be praying for him about his newest book that we'll be talking about before the end of this hour, his latest book that he came out with. But we're glad you guys are tuning into Line of Fire today. We are There's so much going on right now these days, and let me just say it is a great honor to be here on the show, filling in for Dr. Michael Brown, who is away. As many of you guys know, he's in India preaching and lecturing, so continue to remember to be lifting him up in prayers and the continual work that God has called him to do around the world. I just recently got done reading his latest book, and once again, just fantastic. So if you guys have not picked up his latest book on the gay revolution, it is a must read, very insightful. And, you know, I have to say one thing that I've always respected about Dr. Brown, who's a good friend and mentor to all of us that fill in the show on a regular basis when he's gone, is just his kind-heartedness and his ability, one, to bring common sense and reason to the discussion, but also with grace and truth. Instead of dodging the questions and being politically correct, he's very biblically sound, and he comes with the heart of Christ and a love for people. So just an excellent, excellent book. And so what an honor it is to be here. But we have a lot, folks, to talk about today with the shootings recently in San Bernardino that took place 2 days ago. More details are coming out, so we want to get your calls as quick as possible. We're going to be talking about the shooting. And really the biggest thing is this considered to be workplace violence, or is it in fact terrorism? It seems in America today that we are not willing to state the obvious. And so I want to really touch on that. I want you guys to call in. The number is 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-8784. Here on The Line of Fire, I'm your guest host today, Jason Jimenez, but we're going to be talking about workplace violence versus terrorism. Is this in fact what we have here in San Bernardino? And our hearts and our prayers do go out to this incident that happened in San Bernardino. We have 14 people dead, many wounded. We have a lot of families right now as we are on air who are weeping over the loss of loved ones. Some of the people on social media that I've been checking out today, come to find out some of friends I know have relatives and friends in that area. And so they're very, very sad and shocked by this terrorist attack that took place here in San Bernardino 2 days ago. So is this workplace violence, or is this in fact terrorism? So I want to go to the phones right now, and we have Jared, who's on the line right now, has a question about Bible translations. Jared, are you there?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. So my question is a short background. I grew up in an Assembly of God church, basically rejected everything as a teenager. And as an adult, got back, found the importance of God and seeking the truth, not just for me, but for the sake of my family. So this is my first time reading through the Bible, and after the research that I spent, you know, several months doing, you know, here and there on best translations, I came to the conclusion that the New American Standard was the most literal. Mm-hmm. And reading that and other things, though, what I'm finding is that being the most literal may not necessarily mean the most accurate, which led me into research in Messianic translations, which opens up a whole other realm of what's accurate and what's not.
Hey, Jared, I'm going to have to put you on hold. We're going to go to a break right now, but stay online and we'll get to your question in a minute. You're listening to Line of Fire with Jason Jimenez. We'll be back in a second. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is Jason Jimenez. I'll be filling in today for Dr. Michael Brown. Alex McFarland, my colleague, will be on the air in a minute with us. But right now we are on the phone with Jared. Are you still there, Jared?
Yes, sir.
Well, thanks for holding on. So you were talking about Bible translations, and continue.
So essentially my question is, what is going to get the best, the truest and most accurate message? Literal translation or a traditional English or European, you know, the translations that we can get now.
Right,
the New American Standard literal translation.
Sure.
Or a more dynamic equivalent, it would give the Hebrew ideas and the idioms and kind of explain those kind of things. Would you get a better understanding, a more full understanding from that? What should really be the go-to?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And let me just say, I commend you. Like you said, reading through the Bible for the first time, I encourage anyone listening, particularly as a Christian, that we need to be in the Bible daily and we need to be studying. So Jared, you bring up a great question. As a matter of fact, this past year, I had the honor of writing a book with Dr. Norman Geiser called The Bible's Answers to 100 of Life's Biggest Questions. And actually, we deal with this exact question that you're asking, is examining the different English translations. And so to your point is, you know, what should I be reading? And so let me just say this. It depends on what you want to read the Bible about. You know, if you want to do a deep study of the original language, if you really want to know the nuances and the in context of Scripture, if you're just going to do a light reading of Scripture, if you want a study Bible that goes with a particular translation, it depends. So let me say this to you, and to all those people who are listening who may have had, Jared, this similar question, because I think it's a good one, and it's certainly one that I've asked myself and my kids have asked me, and I've had a lot of students and family members and parents ask me. The Bible essentially has two different approaches when it comes to the English translations, if you will. And then we know we have a myriad of them. We have tons of different English translations, but they're broken up in two different things. One is known as the formal equivalence, okay? What that just means is that it's a literal approach of translating the original words in the original languages and conveying, if you will, the meaning of the author, okay? So that's formal equivalence. So as you said earlier, the New American Standard would be something like that, or the Young's literal interpretation would be a formal equivalence of that translation in English. So they're going to be very direct in the original meaning of the original language, okay? The second one is a dynamic equivalence, okay? A dynamic equivalence. This captures the historical meaning and the style of language in the most natural form, okay? And that's important. It's when it comes to the Bible, there's no direct word-for-word correspondence between biblical languages and English. We know that. So we have to try to really stay clear from taking out of context what the writer originally wanted to put and convey into the nuances of the words. And so we want to focus on the heart and meaning. Now, so a word-for-word, if you want a word-for-word translation, if that's what you're looking for and you really like to study the Bible from a word-for-word translation, then you're going to look at the King James Version, the New American Standard, and as I said earlier, the Young's Literal Translation. But if you want to do a thought-by-thought, more of a, and I just so we can understand, more of a contemporary English understanding, a thought by thought would be the NIV, the New International Version, or as some people obviously jokingly say, the nearly inspired version, because a lot of people mm-hmm. don't like it, but it was something that came out in the 70s, or a version that many people don't really read, but it's the CEV, it's the central, or the contemporary English version. But one that has really taken off in the last few years, and one that I certainly have been reading out of, I have a Charles Ryrie Study Bible. It's an ESV. So if you want to take a thought-by-thought and a word-for-word combination, okay, so kind of a formal with a dynamic equivalency combined together, you would want to get the English Standard Version, okay? And then again, you know what? There are times when I, certainly my study and writing books and giving sermons and lectures, there are times when I'll quote from the Living Bible, which is a paraphrase, you know, that kind of really maybe cuts to what the meaning of the context of what the author is saying in a nutshell. So hopefully that'll help you word for word, thought for thought, or both and would be the international, the English Standard Version or the New King James Version or the Century Version. Another one that is very popular among younger people, particularly people I would say that's young in the faith that are learning and understanding, would be the New Living Translation. That's an easier read, but it does not, again, in any way, shape, or form, compromise a whole lot in the original language. So hopefully that helps, Jared. Does that make sense?
It does. I would agree with everything that you've said and come to the same conclusions about all those translations that you listed. I guess really the heart of the question is a Messianic Bible, is a Messianic Bible more going to be more accurate towards the author's original message?
Even though it's
not going to be as literal in, you know, the verbiage, translation is the interpretation going to be more accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. Now, so let's point on something else real quickly. And by the way, if you're taking notes, an excellent book to read on this is The Origin of the Bible, and it's written by Dr. Philip Comfort. Okay, The Origin of the Bible by Dr. Philip Comfort. Now, back to the question. So, because we are gathering more manuscripts, if you will, and we're able to compare more of them collectively than when we first had the New King James Version, for example, right, in the 17th century, we're able to improve, on the original language in English. Because like I say, we can never do a word-for-word comparison completely from one language to the next. That's the transliteration that takes place before it becomes even a translation from one original language to in this case, English. So to your point, the Messianic, a lot of these other ones that are coming out are more clear-cut, again, in the author's intent, and taking some of these nuances and really working diligently on conveying what the original word meant in to English. So yeah, I mean, you'll find that to be a very accurate translation.
Okay. And of the ones that are out right now, which one would you recommend to be the Complete Jewish Bible or the New Tree of Life? Or
I would probably say the Messianic one right now. I would say that one, and you know, that one with the New American Standard, still to me, from my research and my study in them, are the ones that I really tend to like for more of a literal, accurate translation of the original language.
Right. Yeah. The Tree of Life and the Complete Jewish Bible are both Messianic Bibles.
Absolutely.
Bible.
Yeah.
Which one of those two would you recommend?
I would say the Messianic one.
Okay.
Okay. All right, Jared.
Okay,
thanks for the call. I appreciate it, man. God bless you, man.
Have a great day.
Merry Christmas.
God bless you.
You guys are listening to Line of Fire. The number to call in, this is, we're going to be talking about a lot of things today, particularly workplace violence versus domestic terrorism, as some people say it, or as we would say, a terrorist attack led by ISIS ideology. The number you can call in is 866-34-TRUTH. That is 866-34-TRUTH. Before we go to a break, I'm going to go to the phone lines. We have Bill calling from Portland, Maine. His question is about workplace violence. Are you there, Bill?
Yes, I am.
And, thanks for calling the show.
Well, you're welcome. I think that we're going to see an intersection of what we would call terroristic violence with family violence and workplace violence. It is for Satan a perfecta or a trifecta of destruction when he can work religious anger into the workplace and into the family. It's extremely important, I think, no matter what the persuasion, to look to God, whether you call him Allah or whatever you call him, for guidance, because there is no God that wants this type of hatred and destruction. This all comes straight out of hell.
So, well, and Bill, I think you're right to the extent that that this is this a lot of what we're seeing, these shootings at the core of it. Are you saying they would be considered demonic?
Absolutely. And the ability of Satan to work in our lives, those stresses and those daily encounters that we have, whether they are with family members or in our workplaces, to be able to work that into a frenzied level, which leads to the type of violence that we see now frighteningly almost on a daily basis. And there is only one help for that, and that is the Lord our God.
That's the Lord our God. Well, Bill, appreciate the call. For those who are waiting right now, we'll get to your calls. You're listening to Line of Fire. Jason Amidis here. We'll be right back to take your questions. Don't go away.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Line of Fire. Jason Amidis is here filling in for the one and only Dr. Michael Brown. It's always an honor to be in studio, taking your guys' questions on air. If you'd like to call in, the number is 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. I want to go back to the phone lines. We have Harry, who's calling in the Washington, D.C. area. What's your question, Harry?
Hey, Jason, I wanted to comment about the question that you proposed earlier as to whether or not the incidents that we saw in San Bernardino, was it workplace violence or was it an act of terrorism?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just listening to the Jay Sekulow show the other day, mm-hmm. they very plainly explained that the government, and particularly our president, is reluctant to say that we are in a asymmetric war, and that, you know, ISIS and them have launched an attack against us. And I think that the reason that they are reluctant to say that is because they want us to still believe that we're still protected by, you know, our military forces, and that they mm-hmm. have everything under control. When the truth of the matter is that we have been infiltrated and are being threatened to be further infiltrated with the welcoming of refugees from Syria, who ISIS has already said they are already a part of that, the refugee group that are coming in. And mm-hmm. so when we see this incident of what happened the other day, they didn't want to come out and say that it was a terrorist attack, but everything there demonstrated that if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it is a duck. So you right. have two individuals who come equipped with commando equipment. They're outfitted with commando gear. They come in and they do what they do in tactical performance. You have IEDs left at the site of where the crime was committed. You have IEDs in their vehicle. Then their residence looks like a manufacturing plant for IEDs, with the neighbors who were reluctant to mm-hmm. say that they had seen all of these Middle Eastern individuals, you know, frequenting this place, because they didn't want to be accused of being intolerant or right. sympathetic or didn't want to be accused of being discriminatory. But, you know, it is what it is. This was a terrorist attack, just like what we saw that happened over in Paris. And, you know, we're at a place where we've been dumbed down in our thinking as a country, as a whole. And right. we have to just stand up. The people have to stand up and say, and listen, we have common sense, and we know the difference between right and wrong. So this issue about gun control is not going to solve the problem of terrorists coming into this country attacking us further. And so this is what needs to be said. And so this thing that, you know, what we saw that took place, you know, in the church in South Carolina, everybody knew what that was about. That was a racist motivated individual. But this here is an attack against America. And so they need to come out and say that and stop, you know, giving us this false sense of security that we used to have, because we don't have it anymore. We're under attack. We are engaged in a war, and what they're doing is they're targeting the soft spots, because we are an open society, and nobody knows where they're going to be coming from. These people have already pledged that they're going to sacrifice their lives to do what's called upon them to do, and that is to attack us in the way that they have. So this
well,
is
Harry,
what,
yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you called, Harry, and I know that this, I mean, we're open to take any questions, but this is really on the hearts and minds of all Americans, I'm sure, across America right now, not just in this recent shooting in San Bernardino, but all of these shootings that are taking place, especially if they're linked to ISIS. And so to your point, Harry, I mean, listen, isn't it sad that right now, England and France, particularly after going through that atrocity, and they're still facing the challenges that city has to endure, Paris, but they called it what it is, right? They called it radical Islamicism, right? That this was a terrorist attack with an ideology that goes centuries back, right? This jihadist movement to cleanse the world from anyone, they call, in this case, infidels, that prevent anyone from calling Muhammad a false prophet or not bowing and worshiping to Allah, right? This is an attack against civilization. And this religious decree, the caliphate that we have moving across this country and the world, it is sad that this Judeo-Christian nation that was established on the belief in God and natural law, that claims to have about 70% of professed evangelicals in America, and over 90% of people in America believe in God, and yet we cannot call it what it is. Our own administration cannot call this Islamic terrorism. I was on the way coming to do this show, Harry. Josh Earnest, the press secretary, speaking on behalf of the president to the media, I caught the entire briefing. And he only referred it to as violence, right? A violent act. He would not call. And we know this. There's no surprise. Obama, sitting in the Oval Office with his top officials of intelligence, was telling the media that we don't know what this is. And let me just give you a rundown. Harry, I thank you for the call, but continue to listen to this. And I'll get to the calls in a minute before we go to break, or I should say after break. But listen to this. According to Saeed himself, Saeed Farouk, the one of the shooters with his wife, Tashin Malik, he is a Muslim. That's what he says. He is a Muslim. He would go to the mosque. He would practice his religion on a daily basis. His family, his own father, say he was a very devout, a very religious Muslim. In 2013, we know that Saeed went to Saudi Arabia to perform the Hajj pilgrimage, which is required by all Muslims at some point in their life to go to Saudi Arabia, to go to Mecca. There is where he met his future wife. They got engaged. And then shortly after, she came and they got married. On a dating site, Saeed, this is the shooter, this is the terrorist that went into this public facility at a Christmas party and unloaded on his coworkers, the innocent civilians there celebrating Christmas with his wife by his side, who we now know, according to latest reports, that she declared her allegiance to ISIS by putting it on Facebook. Now, Kuku, the Islamic Center director, said that Farouk would come to the center morning and night to do his prayers. The FBI has come out saying that Saeed has been in contact with at least one person on an FBI watch who was a radical terrorist, and they did nothing. Most reports coming out are linking his wife, as we just found out, that she was radicalized, and she probably, more than likely, radicalized her husband. Now, remember, let's go back to even his own attorneys on behalf of the family. The representatives were saying that this is not an Islamic terrorist attack. Let's don't jump to conclusions. He was living the American dream, Saeed. Was he really? Or was this a plot from the beginning? And then his wife made it more of an issue. We'll be right back. You're listening to Line of Fire, Jason Menez. Don't go away.
Hey,
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. I'm your guest host today, filling in for Dr. Michael Brown. Jason Jimenez will be joined shortly with my colleague, Alex McFarland. But right now we are talking about this terrorist attack that took place in California, San Bernardino. And the sad reality is, as we were just taking some calls, and Harry brought up some great points, and I just was touching on a few things that we know now about the situation with this couple. And here's what the scary thing is, folks, and I'm sure many of you listening are thinking the same thing, is this is a terrorist attack that was led by a husband and a wife. I mean, if you stop and you think about this, and a lot of the pundits on the left and a lot of liberal people are coming out talking about gun control, that's going to be the solution. You know, we may talk about in the next hour, but the Daily News came out a few days ago with God isn't fixing this and blaming God and saying, why are people praying, you know, and just becoming so hostile to those people who actually say in response to this atrocity, to this terrorist attack, let's pray. Let's turn to God. Instead, these secularized media pundits are saying that isn't the solution. Gun control policy, bigger government, bigger control over us. I mean, think about this. Montel Williams was on a show last night, and he wants a registry. He wants everybody who owns a gun to register, and so that the government can have a log of all of these people. You're thinking, wait a second. We have gun laws, and we have Second Amendment rights. Okay, Montel Williams, appreciate your service to the military a few years ago, but completely disagree with your take on this whole thing. We do not need the government to have control, complete control, over people's Second Amendment rights. No, that is unconstitutional, and that is not solving anything. God is the answer to this, and he will ultimately fix this. And if you're a believer listening to this, you will know that God is the answer, and we need to be praying on behalf of the victims and their families, and we need to be praying also for our Muslim friends that they would not become radicalized, that they would not continue to falsify some of these things or kind of pretend like this is not anything that comes from the religion itself. We need to have not just cordial conversations, but we have to have real conversations instead of not saying anything like the neighbors that were near Saeed. A man and a woman, two neighbors, were seeing suspicious activity, and they did not say anything. They didn't call the authorities because they were afraid to be labeled as people who are racial profiling, and so they did nothing. This is what it's amounting to. This is what it's turning into. We have to call it what it is, and what we know now is that this is linked to ISIS. This is a terrorist attack, and is the responsibility of the federal government, led by our president, to know what the threat is in order to put an end to it. And one of the questions that we need to be asking more is, who are these people that were going in and out of Saeed's house leading up to this incident? As our last caller talked about, when you look at the amount of ammunition, when you look at the amount of weapons that they had still in their vehicle as well as in their house, we knew that they were up to even a bigger attack than what unfolded, and we thank God for that. So where was God in all this? God was protecting people in the midst as well, and we have to know that. I want to go back to the phones. We have Noel calling from Bronx, New York. Welcome to the Line of Fire, Noel. I guess we lost Noel. So let's go back to the phone. We have Raj. I think it's Raj calling from Virginia. Are you there on the phone, Raj?
That's correct. Thank you, Jason.
Well, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I won't disguise it as a question, but truly it's a comment. The comment is based on my having grown through the partition of India, having seen the violence, having heard the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi, and all these things.
Hey, Raj, I'm sorry. Let me just hold that thought, okay? We'll be right back. We got to go to a break. We'll get your call in a minute. Stay tuned. Line of Fire.
Hey, friends, if you are one of our great listeners in Greater Charlotte, North Carolina, listening all over North Carolina, South Carolina, maybe you've been listening to me regularly for over 7 years now, but you've never met me face to face. Well, this is your opportunity to join together. I can't wait to see you. We're having a special listeners banquet, a special Night to Ignite rally. We've never done this before. You'll be blessed. You'll be inspired. You'll be encouraged. Your faith will be built up. It'll be a special, special night. I'll be bringing a word I believe you remember for years to come. David and Jason Benham, the Benham brothers, will be hosting the event with me, and we'll let you know how you can partner together with us as we raise vision, raise funds, advance the kingdom of God together, and provide you with a great meal. So January 28th, put it on your calendar and join me. I'd love to meet you face to face. Go to nighttoignite.com. Nighttoignite.com. Get in your RSVP as soon as you can.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Jason Jimenez filling in for Dr. Michael Brown. We had Raj on hold there, but before we go to Raj, welcome Alex McFarland to the show.
Welcome, Jason Jimenez. Man, I'm glad to be with you. What an honor to do Dr. Michael Brown's show.
Yeah, we love him.
Yeah, and for those who, sorry I was late coming in, for those just tuning in, I was on another interview.
They're just so popular.
Well, you know, after the shooting in San Bernardino, I was actually there a week ago. It's very sad to hear what's going on, but I did like 13 media interviews yesterday. But really honored to be on. And Jason, I just want to say how I thank God for you. Jason and I lead Stand Strong Ministries. We're traveling the country, speaking to thousands and thousands of young people every year. I mean, we basically do three things: events, broadcasting, and publishing. And I just want to, I don't know if you did it, but I'll give a little plug for our website, which is standstrongministries.org. Mm-hmm. And anyway, but I know you've got a lot of callers, and I'm sure the thing on everybody's mind is the shooting. I got to tell you, I've got an article I wrote last night that's going to hit the wire today. Our publicist that you and I use is going to put it out there. But the often inability or at least unwillingness of leaders, elected leaders, academics, and even many pastors that just seem unwilling to call terrorism terrorism.
Right.
Islamic terrorism.
Islamic terrorism. Call it what it is. And so, well, welcome into the studio, Alex. We'll be taking your calls today. Usually, Dr. Brown has it as a Q&A day, just to call in with any type of questions. But I know on the hearts and minds of a lot of people is this terrorist attack in San Bernardino. Hearts and prayers, as we're doing the show right now, go out to that city, to all Americans there in the midst of this tragedy. God is there. God loves you. God has his special ways, doesn't he, Alex, to even in the midst of tragedy and pain and suffering, to draw people closer to him. And so we do pray for comfort to be upon those people who are going through this right now. But
amen.
But if you guys like to call in and you have a question for Alex and myself, please, we'd like to take your question today on the show here, Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. That number again is 866-348-7884. Raj, go back to the phone line with Raj. Raj, hey, I'm so sorry about that, my friend. I know you were getting into your comment, and we had to go to a hard break there. But welcome back.
Thank you. I'll make it brief and pointed.
Okay.
If you see the danger coming and raise not an alarm, and the people perish, their blood will I require of you. So says the word to all of us. So call to Christian leadership.
Yeah, the prophet Ezekiel, very good.
Years where Christian leadership has been manipulated into showing their soft side, showing their love, and talking about John 3:16 and neglecting John 3:17 and 18. He that believeth not on the Son hath not life, and the wrath of God abideth on him. When will we preach that? All these interfaith council meetings, all these are a sham. What's happening on our campuses? What's happening in our schools? And parents, pastors, leaders, I plead with you, raise an alarm. wake up the people who are sleeping. Tell them there's a danger upon us.
Amen.
And that danger is from the pit of hell. The Quran nowhere calls Muhammad the prophet. Their creed does not call him a prophet, calls him a messenger. There's a big difference between a peon and a prophet. Nothing he said came true. He's a false prophet, and the sooner we recognize that and declare it, and the sooner we disabuse our State Department and all the political science departments of all our major universities who are growing fat on this and disabuse the Council on Foreign Relations of this, there's no hope for us. We've got to preach and teach the truth and the consequences of neglecting the truth to all these people I've mentioned.
Yeah. Amen,
brother.
Well
said, Raj. We appreciate the call. Thank you for listening to the show, and thank you for those profound words. Alex, what's your thoughts on what Raj had to say?
Well, I'm just applauding everything that he's saying. And, you know, I was on a show Monday of this week, and a very, very academic, intellectual show, and somebody emailed me and said, I will not listen to you trash Islam. And I wasn't trashing Islam. I was merely giving some facts, oftentimes many facts from their own writings and from their own leaders. And the fact is that, you know, we are a pluralistic culture in the sense that people can believe whatever they want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
You can be Christian, you can be an atheist, you can believe whatever you want to believe. But we are not a pluralistic culture in the sense of all beliefs being equally true and having equal standing in the eyes of the law. We were clearly, unequivocally founded as a Judeo-Christian culture. You know, case in point, read Dr. Martin Luther King's 1963 Pulitzer Prize-winning book, While We Can't Wait, where he says we are a Judeo-Christian country. Our laws, our judiciary, and I would beg, just like Raj, the caller, I applaud you, listener. Pastors, you're not being loving to coddle people. Jason, do you remember in the Old Testament when it says, my priests say peace, peace, when there is no peace?
Right.
This is no time just to use the pulpit to give people a false sense of security or a false gospel. Our Constitution, our freedoms, and yes, our ability to live for Jesus and preach the gospel hangs in the balance.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly does, Alex, and to those who are listening, I think that we are at a point, Alex, and when we're telling everybody listening to the show right now, this isn't something that we find any satisfaction in.
Yeah.
I mean, one is to see loved ones and families and friends, people, again, once again in America, fleeing a scene of violence, in this case, a terrorist attack that is unfolding. As I was coming in, Alex, a lot of the people were saying on different news channels that it seems like Saeed and his wife, Tashfeen, were planning another attack that more than likely the bombs that they had left behind was probably left there for the academy that was right next door, mm-hmm. that was in training mode. And possibly their intent was to not just inflict harm, but to have mass casualties among law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, and so, again, here we're seeing a very thought out, right, plan of action to create terror,
yes.
in a community where he lived.
Mm-hmm.
And people can say, well, he was living the American dream. I believe from what we are seeing and knowing the linkage, and you and I talk about all the time in our ministry, Stand Strong Ministries, and all the places we go, this is a deep-seated ideology. And the more secular we become, the less engaging we are on these ideas.
Yeah.
They want us to not speak to the truth. They call it Islamophobic.
Yeah.
Remember, it was a Muslim Brotherhood that created that whole slogan.
Yeah.
Anybody who discredits the religion of Islam or speaks against it is considered to be Islamophobic. And
yeah.
that's not, if we're stating the facts, if we're stating the obvious, that is not being Islamophobic, is it? All the signs that we're seeing was this was an unfolding terrorist attack, and it could have been worse, and by God's grace, it wasn't.
Let me tell a quick story. In the state of Virginia alone, I have had clearance at 27 jails and prisons. I was at death row in, it's called Greensville Correctional Center. If you're listening in Virginia, you know what I'm talking about. I went to Greensville prison to preach easily 24 times. Death row, been there 2 or 3 times. And I believe this is Jarrett County, Virginia. So I'm on death row to visit inmates. And there was an inmate that I was talking to, and one of the wardens that had me back there said, you might not want to talk to this guy. He's kind of dangerous. I go back there. There's 2-inch thick glass between this prisoner in a cell and myself. And I began to share the gospel. Now, this was 10 years ago, Jason. And he said, well, I'm a Muslim, and I'm not interested. And we begin to talk. I want to tell you what happened because it will blow your mind.
Yeah.
It will blow your mind.
Well, you're listening to Line of Truth. Jason Jimenez here with Alex McFarland. You're listening to Line of Fire. We'll be right back with your questions. Don't go away.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Jason Jimenez sitting in for Dr. Brown here with my colleague and friend, Dr. Alex McFarland. Great to see you, my brother.
Good to be with you.
Just hanging out, having a good time.
Yeah, right? A good time.
Good time, well, in here, content obviously that's on everyone's mind about these shootings.
I got to finish this story about being in a death row in Virginia. But the good news is, I mean, Christ is in control, and people, we want to get this across. Jesus Christ is in control. Jesus is able to restrain evil, but we need to pray to the Lord. But I'm at death row in Virginia, and my point in sharing this is just to show, look, we love people. We love Muslims, but we disagree with Islam. I'm in this cell area, and behind 2-inch glass is a man on death row in Virginia. And we begin to talk, and I said, well, I'm a Christian. And he began to get more and more angry, and he said, I serve Allah, and Islam is going to rule the world. And I'll never forget, and this is a direct quote, my hand to the Lord. He said, the blood of Americans will run deep in the streets. Allah is going to destroy the great Satan, America, and your friendship with Israel is bringing the judgment of Allah. And so I'm standing there, and this guy's just like having a meltdown, just raising his voice. Okay, Jason, I had in my hand a New Testament, and he looked down. I was raising my hand, and he saw my New Testament. This guy began to scream at me. He began to beat his fists on the glass. And he was in like a 10-foot-long, 4-foot-wide cell. He said, and he was cursing, and he was speaking this broken, he was an American trying to speak Arabic. But I watched this guy absolutely go berserk at me, at the gospel, at the sight of my New Testament, and he was shouting curses on America. This guy was on death row. The warden came in. He was like, look, I think you better go. And I did. My point is this, look. Churchill said it in 1899. In 1899, Winston Churchill wrote a book about the Sudan, a 2-volume history of the Sudan. And Churchill said, quote, while individual Muslims may show admirable qualities, the movement itself is the most retrograde force in the world. And he goes on and on. By the way, modern editions of Churchill's book on the Sudan, where Churchill says, he says, Islam in a man is worse than rabies in a dog.
Wow.
One of the greatest leaders of the last 100 years, Winston Churchill, said that. Modern editions cut that out. The Churchill Center in England was asked, is that quote authentic? And they said, yes, that section is authentic.
Wow.
So, look, we love people. Jesus loves all people. But as an ideology, as a worldview, Islam most certainly is in the arena of ideas, and is subject to critique. And look at the fruit of Islam. My goodness. We're going to nice ourselves into oblivion here. We have to speak truth.
Well, and speaking truth for sure, Alex, and also the danger that it will have upon Americans if our administration, if the people that we elect to protect and to preserve the Constitution of the United States fail to do their job, and then when we are attacked, right, targeted and attacked, as we're seeing time and time again, and we fail to recognize where that's coming from, it will continue to grow, right?
That's
it will continue to get out of control. While you're listening to Line of Fire, if you'd like to call into the show, ask any question you guys have that's on your mind. We'd love to take your questions. The number is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-TRUTH. But one of the things that we're definitely talking about today is whether this you would consider, if you're out there and you're listening, you think that this is work violence, you think this is a workplace violence, that this was not planned, this was just, he got ticked off at the Christmas party and decided to come back with his wife with tactical gear and all of the amount of weapons and the semi-automatic weapons he had and the bombs that he was carrying, call in. We'd like to have a cordial, open, civil debate, a discussion, a discourse on these issues. But from what we are seeing, from all indications, from all the evidence, from this ideology as we know, and the link that it has now to ISIS, Alex, this is a clear-cut case as we're trying to plead with our leaders that this is a terrorist attack and we need to call it for what it is. And we need to put a plan together and to protect Americans that are living in all the other communities around us.
Yes.
But we'd like to go to the phone lines now. We got Alberto who is calling in from Georgia. Alberto, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, sir. My question is, everybody says about Islam, it's a religion of sore, you know, hatred and all that. But then Jesus Christ said, he's the Prince of Peace, but he himself said in Matthew 10:34, I don't come to bring peace, but a sword. To divide mother and children, fought against each other. So what's the different contrast between Islam, father, sword, and the Jesus mentioned in Matthew 10:34? He said he come bring a sword, not peace. Yeah, he's supposed to be the Prince of Peace.
That's a good question, Alberto. We appreciate you calling in and asking the question. Alex, what are your thoughts in response to what Alberto asked?
Well, you know, whenever you're looking at a Bible passage, you know, there's this old saying, a text out of context is a pretext. And I'm not saying you took that out of context. I'm not saying that at all. But when Jesus talks about a sword, he was talking about in the sense of darkness being overcome by light and love overcoming hate. In other words, the kingdom of God is coming in to overcome the fallen world, the kingdom of this world. And the point is, in the gospel and the Great Commission, the followers of Jesus were never, ever commanded to slay the unbeliever wherever you find them, as the Quran says. And Surah 328 says that you can lie to the unbeliever. You know, we were never called to perpetrate violence against those who were not Christians. In fact, Jesus said quite the opposite. Love your enemies, pray for those who despitefully use you. And so bringing a sword rather than peace, the fact is Christianity is a dividing line, isn't it, between nations and people and even family members. I mean, if you embrace Jesus Christ, sometimes those closest to you will reject that and will misunderstand. What we've got to do, everyone listening, if you love God and country, you love the Lord, you love America, we have to lovingly but consistently speak the truth. And you know, all of these things, you know, there was the shooter in Oregon. There was the stabbing of a Jewish professor in California. There's San Bernardino. Okay, we've seen throughout the summer, Chattanooga. We've seen November, now December. Folks, I believe, I don't know if you've talked about this yet, Jason, all of these very regular, it's almost you can set your watch by it, these are planned to disrupt society, to put people on edge, to make people afraid. There's been a very slow, subtle, kind of under-the-radar influx. Mm-hmm. And look, I think it's no accident that just as November, it was announced that the first Muslim-majority city council is now in Michigan. And I was on the phone this week, Jason, with somebody who lives there in the Dearborn area. There's a slow move take over America, get people elected, overthrow the U.S. Constitution, and it begins by the violence and intimidating people into silence.
Alberto, hold that thought. We'll be right back to listen to Line of Fire.
It is my privilege to welcome to these microphones at the Line of Fire today my guest host, Dr. Alex McFarland and Jason Jimenez.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, welcome, friends. For all those who are listening to The Line of Fire, Jason Jimenez here in the studio, filling in for Dr. Michael Brown with my colleague and friend, Dr. Alex McFarland, who we do the Stand Strong Ministries together. And by the way, if you guys love watching TV, we have a great show that you and I produce together on the NRB network. It's called Viral Truth TV, so you could go to viraltruth.com, and we have... this fall, we just kicked it off this past August. It's so if you have DirecTV, I totally forgot what channel. I think it's like 370 something because I don't have DirecTV.
I know.
So if I want to watch our own show, I have to wait until it comes online.
Do you know what? We've been doing this now for a couple of months.
Yeah.
I have never seen our show on television because I'm like, oh, on Wednesday nights, I'm always in a church and we're speaking.
Yeah, know? Wednesday nights at 5 p.m. It's on, but you could go to viraltruth.com and check out. We have done tons of shows, and I think this month, obviously leading up to Christmas, you and I did a two-part series.
We did.
On one is your dear friend, David Silverman, the atheist, that leads the American Atheism.
American Atheist. Started 50 years ago by America's sweetheart, Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, we did about the facts of Christmas. Because, you know, the atheists, always groping for some headlines, they put up those billboards at Christmas that say Jesus is a myth. Mm-hmm. By the way, I was
Or they say you don't need to have Christ in Christmas, you know, and so they have a picture of Santa. Yeah. And saying, you know, and then a picture of the nativity and saying, which one's the myth kind of a thing, you know, kind of a put down.
And by the way, do you know St. Nicholas, the Bishop of Myra. Turkey?
Yeah, in Turkey.
Was at the Council of Nicaea in 325. Mm-hmm. Even when they, because I love Santa Claus. Hey, you know, I grew up by two godly parents. We did Santa Claus, and whether you do or don't, you know, that's beside the point. My point is, even when they just want to invoke a secular symbol like Santa Claus, hey, you're talking about a major Christian leader of 1,700 years ago, St. Nicholas, who was a literal historical figure.
Yeah, well, within context, you say St. Nicholas, you know, the man who fed the poor and was very generous. And like you said, he was at the Council of Nicaea, was very prominent in the time and day. And, of course, legendary things take their form in different countries, start labeling different names for that mythical character that we now know here in America as to be Santa Claus. But that's besides the point. But have you been naughty or nice, though, Alex? That's the key thing. We need to find out what you're going to get. Because I know what you're going to get. I already got you close.
I'm afraid I'm probably headed for a lump of coal.
I think I'll just buy you a book, right? You like books.
I like books.
You're a reader.
Just release
you know,
a
you
book.
Could get, for Christmas, you could give me one of your books.
I know. Do you know what? My wife is always saying, what do you want to give different people for Christmas? She asked me last night, she goes, what are you going to give Jason Jimenez for Christmas?
Yeah.
I said, let's give everybody some books. Angie's like, they don't want your book, Alex. I was like, well, they might.
Well, you give it to me and I'll give it to somebody else who really would read it.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
No, I'm teasing. You're one of my favorite authors.
Well, thanks.
Christian authors. You're right there to C.S. Lewis and Dr. Norman Geiser and Dr. Michael Brown.
I got to tell you, folks, I want to be on record, and we're going to get back to the phones. 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. We are so honored to be on the Dr. Michael Brown Show, The Line of Fire. But God has done a lot in our life. Mm-hmm. For two years, Jason and I have been meeting, praying, working. God led us to start something called Stand Strong Ministries. We're traveling the country, speaking to audiences of all ages to reinforce biblical truth. And in this year, in 2015, you know, we got to be on the radio two times with James Dobson.
Mm-hmm.
We are writing a book, two books actually, And I just want to be on record praising God for the. You and I have spoken all over the country, and we've got a big 2016 coming. And folks, we want to come to your town and talk to your kids. We'll debate your atheists, and we'll evangelize the lost, equip the saved. That's our call.
We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Jason Jimenez here in studio with Alex McFarland. We are glad you guys are tuning in to the show today. We've been talking a lot about workplace violence versus terrorist attack. And clearly, from what we talked about in the last hour, Alex, that is clearly an indication that this is a terrorist attack, and they're growing, sad to say. But meanwhile, we've been on the phone. Alberto, are you still there? I know you've been waiting patiently.
Yes, sir.
So we appreciate the question, and definitely...
one more quick question. Sure. Real quick. You mentioned about that we have a Second Amendment to have a gun, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
We have a right to protect ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how come when Jesus won't get arrested, when Peter pulled out his sword to protect Jesus, how come it's wrong for him to protect themselves, and yet it was okay for us to protect ourselves, but it was wrong for him to protect Jesus and themselves against the Roman soldiers?
Yeah. Well, those are definitely great questions, Alberto. So let's go back to your previous one, as Alex was talking about this whole question is, what did Jesus mean when he said, I came to bring a sword in Matthew chapter 10, 34 through 36. So let's put things in context and understand it. And I think what you're doing is putting it also in saying versus Islam. So what is the difference? So let me just, so we could be clear, and on all of our listeners, Alberto, do you believe, though, that Islam is a violent religion, or would you say it's a peaceful religion?
No, I watch tons of videos on the internet. And I know the origin of it, it's not, they got different interpretations throughout the history, their manuscripts, they're all different leaders interpret the Quran differently, and so they got different manuscripts of the Islam, so each leader interprets it, differently, but maybe the later writings of Muhammad were more violent than the previous writings, they say, of him were different, I guess over the years, maybe keep on more people, it became more violent, I guess, in his writing. So, but you can't blame really the people. I think that they're just being faithful to their belief system. So, it's basically the spirit behind that is really the problem, not the actual people themselves. That's my opinion.
Well,
about their lives, so you're just acting based on what you believe. So not actual people themselves, that is the spirit behind that, is that it's influencing them.
I'm glad you're saying that people are acting on what they believe, and if that be the case, and I agree that the terrorism that we're seeing is because people believe, and if the beliefs are leading them to this, clearly this is a belief system that breeds evil and violence. I mean, it is because beliefs inform behavior, and terrorism is an outgrowth of a belief system that encourages the murder of the infidel, and the infidel being Americans and Israel and Christians and non-Muslims. Let me say this. I've studied a fair amount, like 25 years, on the origin and growth of Islam. And in a less politically correct time, like 80 years ago, when things weren't given spin and nuance and politicizing as they are now, there's a book called The World's Great Religions by a man named Samuel Braden. And it's a very scholarly book on world religion. And there's a quote in there, Jason, that I've thought about. He says, Islam is the only world religion that was started simply to be in conscious opposition to Judaism and Christianity. This is an 80-year-old world religion book from a long time ago. Samuel Braden, The World's Great Religions. He says, Islam is the only religion that was started simply to be in conscious opposition to Judaism and Christianity. End of quote. Mm. Now there's some backstory behind that, but it has. A more recent book that I would recommend people take a look at is called The Clash of Civilizations by Samuel Huntington. Huntington's a very famous book. Even Jimmy Carter, who is kind of a milquetoast, not a guy known to make untempered remarks, President Jimmy Carter said that Islam has, quote, a love of bloodshed and warfare, end of quote. Mm.
Mm. So that's your question. When you say that Islam, you mean when Muhammad made it until the way he taught it, or the pre-Islamic Islam? Remember, because Islam did the way before Muhammad changed it.
One writer from nearly a century ago, a man named Hume, said that Muhammad, quote, was a domineering, warring autocrat who prostituted his religious abilities for imperialistic designs. Muhammad was a domineering, warring autocrat who prostituted his religious leadership for imperialistic designs. And that's a big, lofty way of saying he was an aggressor. He was. I do want to say one thing. You mentioned when Peter cut off the ear of the Roman soldier there in John chapter 18, that was not an act of self-defense. That's what Jesus reprimanded Peter and said, hey, put your sword away. And Jesus, that was the last miracle he did before the cross, the Malchus, the soldier. So while we are given the nations and individuals, biblically speaking, nations and individuals are given the right to self-defense. Jesus reprimanded Peter there in the garden because when Peter grabbed the sword of that soldier and cut off the ear of Malchus, that was not self-defense.
Well, and the other thing too, and Alberto, it's a good point, but again, as we do talk about this stuff to get a deeper understanding, Jesus was being led to the cross. That was the whole purpose. And Peter was trying to prevent that. Time and time again, people were trying to prevent him from going on the cross because the Messiah, in their mind, even as a Jew to that point, did not understand the death that he would die. But then when he was talking about crucifixion numerous times through his ministry, they were trying to prevent that from happening. So you can't lump that into self-defense. When you look at the Second Amendment, you look at the historical context when it comes to the Constitution and Americans and what the founders intended, it was to defend yourself from a tyrannical rule, which, remember, our founding fathers originated from a land of tyranny, okay, of despotism. So to have Americans, civilians, armed not to the teeth to rage war on anyone or to shoot to kill anyone they feel like it, it was to protect themselves ultimately from people invading their property, right? Taking over their land, their possessions, their family, controlling them. It was a way that we are, as the Second Amendment says, that we have a right to be armed. So those are two separate things, but real quickly, and again, appreciate the call, Alberto. Thank you for calling Line of Fire. But, you know, let's make sure we have some clarity when it comes to this context about what Jesus meant by the sword. I think, Alex, you brought it up, and I want to just emphasize to our listeners and also to Alberto, I think he was, again, very, very insightful as he was trying to ask and try to understand the difference between the two. But in Matthew chapter 10, it has to do with, like you said, a spiritual way, right? And not to take literally, but to say he came to divide. He came to say, I am the truth. Okay. And I will divide because you're going to either have people are going to follow me as the Messiah, as the Son of God who came into the world to die on the cross for people's sins, or people are going to deny that and reject that, as we saw that some people did. Mm-hmm. So in proper context, we understand something when we look at it, saying that was a figurative way of speaking to something on a spiritual level, not something historically or literally to be taken that he brought a sword. And then when you, as you pointed out in the garden, Peter did take out a literal sword to cut Malchus's ear off. Mm-hmm. And he reprimanded him. And the other thing too is, remember, we had a lot of zealots in those days.
Exactly.
And Jesus did not promote that. And many times they try to make him king and he refused those opportunities. He did not come to rage war literally. Mm-hmm. Now let's look at Muhammad. He did from the beginning. And I think that our last caller maybe needs to spend a little bit more time looking at jihadism when you look at history. the founding of Islam is in fact Muhammad and his and the quote prophecies and visions that he received on numerous occasions that were eventually written down. But if you take an honest look at the 1400 years of violence under Islamic history, they would come to a reasonable conclusion, anyone would, a reasonable conclusion, if you're looking at it objectively, that Islam, the Islamist goal is to conquer the world by raging active jihad on Christians, mm-hmm. on Jews, and any other infidel or non-Muslim, right, a disbeliever in the religion. If you go back to, for example, the Arabian Jihad from 622 to 750 AD, Muhammad and his followers wage war and subdue the people in the Arabian Peninsula, led by Muhammad. When he died upon his death in 632, there were four caliphs that took power, and they unleashed a torrent of violence, conquering the Middle East, Africa, Asia, and Europe. Then in the 11th century, you have the Turkish Jihad, that the rise of the Ottoman Empire that killed Roman Catholics and Christians, beheading people as we're seeing today in the present jihad that we're seeing right now. So from day one, you cannot compare Jesus and Muhammad, saying that Jesus was violent. You're listening to Line of Fire. We'll be back in a minute.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Jason Amit is in studio here with Alex McFarland. Just had a great conversation with one of the callers. We appreciate the call. That was really insightful.
We talking
just about the, you know, I think that's a good, I think, example, Alex, of that, again, we can have disagreements and there's different perspectives, or sometimes we bring in different points of history or context, or, you know, or even taking things out of context or misquoting something. But I think with Alberto certainly was two great questions of saying, hey, what is the difference between when Jesus said in Matthew 10 that I came to bring a sword and then what Muhammad did? Now, we clearly know that Jesus didn't go around killing people because they refused to follow him,
right?
And establish an empire that was contrary to the Roman Empire that was in power in those days as his people were being oppressed. Clearly, we saw with Muhammad when he was convinced that Judaism and Christianity weren't true, and that he had received these new revelations, and he started to have followers and focused on a monolism, focused on a theistic point of view, that modalism, that God is one, and went against anything that went contrary to that and led by the sword. We looked at, again, in the Arabian Peninsula, if anybody looks at the lifespan of Muhammad, it was bloodshed and terror.
Right.
Okay? And then you clearly look at the surah, you clearly look at the hadith, and you see, for example, in Surah chapter 2, verses 190 to 193, it says, fight in the cause of God those who fight you, and slay them wherever ye catch them, and fight them on until there is no more tumult or oppression, and there prevail justice and faith in God. In the hadith, chapter 1, in the section 135, the prophet said, the person who participates in holy battles in Allah's cause, and nothing compels him to do so except belief in Allah and his apostles, will be recompensated by Allah either with a reward or booty if he survives, or will be admitted to paradise if he is killed in the battle as a martyr. Had I not found it difficult for my followers, then I would not remain behind any Syria going from jihad. I would have loved to be martyred in Allah's cause and then made alive, and then martyred, and then made alive, and then again martyred in his cause. Meaning, if I could live a life to lay down my life, and in this case, we say in modern times, as a suicide bomber, in the name of Allah, as we're seeing many attacks of Allah Akbar, you know, this quote is, Allah is great, Allah is great, Allah is great, and continue that cycle of martyrdom on behalf of Allah by killing the infidel.
Yeah.
That is not just sickening and twisted, but that is an ideology that has been through the breadth and span of the jihadism that we're seeing. This caliphate that has taken place, the attacks against Paris, now the attacks against our only livelihood. Alex, you know, we're talking about it. These attacks is against not just in the communities that are taking place, but they are attacks on our very existence, on our livelihood,
yes,
on our freedoms, on civilization. and on our Constitution. They're using freedoms that we have as Americans to advance their agenda, and we have to understand that. Now, listen, one of the things that you and I are avid about is, and so is Michael Brown here in the ministry of Line of Fire, is we need to engage our Muslim friends. Not many of them, you know, hold to these views, clearly. We know that. And many of them condone these brutal acts. But I think it's important that we collectively, with other Muslims that do condone these acts, to call it for what it is, that these are radicalized Muslims that are committing a jihadist act in the name of Allah to spread and advance Allah's will.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're seeing here. And we need to reach these people in the love of Jesus Christ.
And we need to pray. I want to call on Christians to pray, to fast and pray. Maybe some of you might want to engage in a 40-day fast. Check with your doctor and make sure that you can physically handle that. But we really need to pray for God to restrain evil. But I want to say another thing, Jason, that we need people to write letters to their elected officials. You know, we live in a representative republic. People, you know, the Constitution, the preamble begins, "We the people." And we need to let our elected leaders know that we want our representatives to defend the U.S. Constitution. People talk about, you know, well, I'm a Christian and my home is in heaven, and that's true, of course. But I want you to know, look, we can't serve Jesus, we can't live godly in Christ Jesus, as the Bible says, if there isn't an America. And folks, there is a cancer growing, a terminal illness in the American culture, and it's called Islam.
Mm.
Now, we love people, we pray for people, but I'm not being alarmist. I'm not overstating the case. You know, we were at NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters. We interviewed a lady named Noni Darwish. Noni Darwish wrote a book called Now They Call Me Infidel, Why I Renounced Jihad. She was a Muslim, married to a Muslim man. She became a Christian. She was beaten. She said this in her book, Now They Call Me Infidel, former Muslim Noni Darwish. She said, quote, "Barbarities such as the brutalization of women, the persecution of homosexuals, honor killings, the beheading of apostates, and the stoning of adulterers come directly out of the Quran." She said this, that Islam and Sharia is adding greatly to the world's stock of ministry, misery, quote unquote. And she said, Islam is, quote, an authoritarian ideology that is attempting to impose on the modern world the norms of 7th century culture of the Arabian Peninsula. I could go on and on. But it's interesting. You hear the milquetoast, placating words of leaders like our president, Barack Obama. And then whenever I have on my show or I interview for my books, ex-Muslims, it's like, run, be alarmed, you know, be afraid, be very afraid. I was in Cincinnati about a year ago. There was a ministry, I won't give the name of it, but there was a gathering of ex-Muslims, now Christians. And Jason, these are engineers, these are attorneys, these are medical doctors, these are professional people, these are not yahoos. And there were hundreds, I was with hundreds of ex-Muslims, Cincinnati, Ohio, a gathering September of 2013, and it was my privilege for 2 days just to teach theology. And these people were getting up on stage, giving their testimony of coming out of Islam, being threatened for their life, being disowned by their families, females being beaten within an inch of their life. Why? Because they trusted Jesus. And these people, many of them now American citizens that love America, that are now Christians, are saying, look, this will be America's undoing if you don't realistically, and leaders, I'm talking in the classroom, in the pulpit, and certainly in Washington, need to understand that the rise of Islam presents a threat to American interest, American safety, ultimately to the American Constitution itself.
Mm. Well, well said, Alex. And those of you who are listening right now, I mean, take heart in knowing, as we bring these truths, that they're hard sometimes to process, and they certainly are difficult in the time and day that we live in that's being politically correct. But truth is truth. It's not our truth that we're conveying, but it's the truth of God. So we want to take comfort in that. You're listening to Line of Fire. We'll be back in a minute to take your questions.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Jason Jimenez with Alex McFarland. We are filling in for Dr. Michael Brown. Continue to pray for him as he is, as the world is on fire and this caliphate is growing and ISIS is on the move. Right now, our Central Intelligence and the FBI have all come out saying that right now in America, think about this, friends, in America today, and as you're listening to this and you have a question, you can call in 866-34-TRUTH, 866-34-8788-4 to Line of Fire. Alex and I would love to take your question. So whatever is on your mind, separate from these type of things, just as you could tell, at our heart and mind and in the media right now, is we're really evaluating this as we pray for the people in San Bernardino. If you have a family member, friend there, our hearts go out to you guys. We continue to pray and lift you up. But if you think about this right now, Alex, and with this whole thing that's unfolding before us, the top official in our intelligence said on Monday that there will be an attack on America soil like that in Paris. Mm-hmm. I mean, to think about that. And right now we have over 1,000 ongoing investigations with ties to ISIS that are ongoing right now here in America. And I think we saw one of them that could have been prevented to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We don't know that. But if people were not afraid of seeing what they saw to be suspicious behavior, rather than to be too concerned about racial profiling, think about this. And if you're listening and this is upsetting to you, call in. We want to talk to you about this because I think that we need to have healthy conversations, but we need to look at the level of truth in all of this and not be conformed to our ideology or our way of thinking or even emotionalism, but that we have to side on truth and do something about it. But listen to this. This comes from the Attorney General Loretta Lynch herself. Mm-hmm. So in the midst of all this kind of stuff, what is the answer? Is the answer to come out with a strategic plan against ISIS? Is the plan to look at the intelligence that they were having with Saeed and the people that he was encountering? Was the problem to investigate the vetting that took place with Tashfeen Malik when she came here to marry Saeed? And remember, they have a six-month-old.
Mm-hmm.
A six-month-old that they handed over to their grandmother and said, oh, we have to go to a doctor's appointment. We'll be right back.
They knew where this
they
was
knew
headed.
Where, yes. You don't bring tactical gear, right? Who brings tactical gear with a plan coming in there and an exit strategy with 12 bombs in their apartment, fit 5,000 ammunitions, you know, with these guns? But here's the point. So are they looking at this to say, here's how we're going to investigate this and here's how we're going to bring not stricter policies and laws to this whole thing, but we are going to get all of our intelligence together and we are going to plead our case before Congress and we are going to tell the American public that we will respond and like France has done with the Paris attack, right? Like they have done, they call it Islamic radicalism. No, you know what?
They're dismantling the mosques.
You know what they told America? Step aside. We got this. If we need your help, we'll call on you.
Because they know that our leadership from the Oval Office down has been soft on Islam and terrorism.
Well, our response is climate change is the greatest threat, not ISIS, not abortion.
Give me a break.
This is ridiculous.
Give me a break.
If this doesn't upset you, listen to what our attorney general, this is the top cop, the top prosecutor, okay? She was speaking at a Muslim advocacy group. Okay, so these are Muslim activists, and a group to Muslim activists, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, on Thursday, said this. This is a response to saying this is the greatest fear that she has, the greatest fear. Now, keep this in context of all the shootings that are going on, that her department would take aggressive action, Alex, against anyone who uses, quote, anti-Muslim rhetoric, end quote, that, quote, edges towards violence, end quote. Now, this was speaking at the 10th anniversary dinner her most greatest fear and the most thing that she feared the most that was disturbing to her was Muslim rhetoric. This is ridiculous. This is an outrage, and we won't stand for it. You're listening to Line of Truth. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey, friends, if you are one of our great listeners in Greater Charlotte, North Carolina, listening all over North Carolina, South Carolina, maybe you've been listening to me regularly for over 7 years now, but you've never met me face to face. Well, this is your opportunity to join together. I can't wait to see you. We're having a special listeners banquet, a special Night to Ignite rally. We've never done this before. You'll be blessed. You'll be inspired. You'll be encouraged. Your faith will be built up. It'll be a special, special night. I'll be bringing a word I believe you remember for years to come. David and Jason Benham, the Benham brothers, will be hosting the event with me, and we'll let you know how you can partner together with us as we raise vision, raise funds, advance the kingdom of God together, and provide you with a great meal. So January 28th, put it on your calendar and join me. I'd love to meet you face to face. Go to nighttoignite.com. Nighttoignite.com. Get in your RSVP as soon as you can.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to Line of Fire. We've been having a blast here, Alex, in studio on behalf of Dr. Michael Brown, who's in India right now. So continue to pray for him as he's traveling, speaking, and lecturing. Just once again, when I came in here, so they can admit, he's so sharp. I mean, he's 60 years old, man. But man, he's got full energy.
You know, I've followed his ministry for years. I've known him as a friend for a decade now. Yeah. And just one of the most brilliant people, but I happen to know also one of the most godly. And my respect for Dr. Michael Brown is just beyond measure. Hey, I see on hold, we've got Michael in Texas. We've got Raleigh, North Carolina. If you want to join in the conversation, we'll take your calls. 866-34-TRUTH, T-R-U-T-H. That's 866-348-7884. Jason.
So yeah, let's go to, we have KC who's been on hold here in Raleigh. KC, welcome to Line of Fire. What's your question?
How are you doing? I'm wondering what the appeal to Islam is. Do you have any insight on this, please?
That's a great question. Do you know what I think? Some of it is the structure. I mean, it is hyper, hyper structuralized. And, you know, we live in an age that's, we used to say postmodernism. Now they call it post-postmodernism, where everything's fragmented. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, and you got to understand, I mean, I grew up in, you know, having freedom and the ability to, you know, kind of think for yourself and plot your own destiny was kind of appealing. Believe it or not, there are people kind of adrift at sea, and they want to know, like, what to believe. They don't want to have to think for themselves. They like to be told what to believe. And I think in a world, now that we've cut ourselves adrift from Christianity and everything's just kind of like floating in midair, along comes an ideology that says, look, you don't have to think. We will tell you everything. Right. I think that might be part of the appeal.
Yeah, I think too. Yeah, KC, I think that's a great question. And by the way, we're excited that one of the books that Alex and I have been writing is called Stand Strong America. And one of the segments in the book is we talk about ISIS. And a good friend of ours, Eric Stackelback at CBN, he is a Muslim expert, and he's there with Pat Robertson, and he's written books like The Terrorist Next Door, and he just recently came out with a book that Sean Hannity endorsed called ISIS Exposed. Well, we sat down with him a while ago and asked him a series of questions. And the question you just asked, KC, which is a great question that we need to be not only asking but looking into as part of evangelism, as part of finding the truth. But we asked him the question, why are so many Americans joining ISIS? What is the attraction? Now, one, let's face it, we live in a social media world. And what is ISIS doing? They have a massive campaign. We were talking with Eric, and he investigates this stuff day in and day out. He lives and breathes what's happening with Muslims around the world, particularly here in America. And he was telling us some scary things about the social media campaigns that are out there, live chat rooms that they have with people. So social media is giving ISIS the advantage of getting their propaganda out to millions of people. But also, I think what Alex said, I think, is very, very important. We have this anti-Americanism that is growing in America, particularly among younger people. And they want to dethrone America because they don't like it. Mm-hmm. And remember, this is the entitlement generation. This is what welfare America has done. If America does not deliver the goods to me, then I don't want to have anything to do with it. But there's not a religious connotation that comes with it. ISIS is on the move, and they have a clear-cut agenda, and they're dethroning, if you will, empires that have done wicked things, right? Crooked things, evil things. You know, this whole mentality of America being the superpower of the world is old news, and we need an ideology movement, a grassroots movement that is very religious. Plus, by the way, let's not forget, KC, and for those who are listening, why are people so appealed or moving towards ISIS? Look at the violence that is glorified, the barbarity of ISIS. Think about, Alex, the games that these kids play. Mm-hmm. And to think that you can live out, okay, a jihadist life, you could be a martyr of Allah and you could be in paradise forever. And so you could go around and you could behead people. You can kill people in the name of God. And you have a whole religion that will forgive you and atone for any sins that you've committed in life. And you'll go to heaven.
And we'll reward you.
And we'll reward you for it. So, Casey, I think that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's probably one reason why there has been a growing appeal to Islam.
Do you remember in John chapter 16, verse 2, Jesus said, John 16, verse 2, Jesus said, the time will come when those who kill you think they do God a service. Jesus predicted this. I know we've got callers holding 866-34-TRUTH.
Casey, thank you for the call. Before we go to a break, we'll go to David on the line. David, what's your question here on the Line of Fire?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Real briefly, I just, though I called for a different purpose, I did want to say there's an ironic twist of the John Lennon Imagine song where he says, nothing to live or die for. And that's what young people are looking for today. Multiculturalism does not fulfill the purposes of something to live and die for. But that's an aside. I was curious if you could comment on how we can put together something like Barack Obama saying we need not fear, but we need to be diligent nevertheless in keeping an eye on the situations around us. And yet the example that I see is of a young boy in high school, if I remember correctly, who built that clock. And by all appearances, if you do not know what it was he was building, it was a suspicious-looking device. And he did have a Muslim name. And yet when he was set aside and questioned about it, the people who set him aside to question about it were duly chastised. And I don't know if you might be able to comment on that. Thank you.
Well, yeah, absolutely, David. And thank you for the call. And for those who want to call, we have a few more minutes on Line of Fire. You can call in at 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. You're listening to Line of Fire. Jason Mendez here with Alex McFarland. That's a great question, David. Alex, when you're thinking about this boy with the clock, I mean, but let's understand that once again, we immediately had the ACLU come to this boy's defense, but what we found to be true was this was a setup from the beginning. Mm. He was told not to do what he did ahead of time, and he was making a point for people to know that this clock that he said was some type of science project. We knew this kid was a lot smarter than we know, right? His dream was to be at MIT, and now you have all these universities coming to his aid and saying, oh, we're going to help you. He was a ploy. This is what the Muslim Brotherhood initiatives, people like CARE, the Concerned American Islamic Relations groups do, Alex, is they want a new face.
And by the way, CARE has come out today saying that this was America's fault. By the way, I've got to interject this.
Yeah.
Senator Rubio and Graham vote to continue Muslim immigration from countries with jihadist movements. There was a bill put up today by Rand Paul that basically said it would have suspended visa issuances to more than 30 Muslim countries with active jihadist populations. So among the people that opposed it this is stopping immigration from countries with jihadist movements. This was supported by Ted Cruz, but Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio opposed this. Okay, they are off my list right now as of this. This is crazy. This is insane. And part of the reason, one of the callers asked why people gravitate toward this. For one thing, we have a president who has not spoken out against Islam. He has not spoken for America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to talk about this. By the way, Jason and I are going to be guest hosting for Dr. Brown. We are profoundly honored to do that on December 8 and 9. We urge you to tune in. But we're going to talk about those in the elite media and academia. They refer to love of America as jingoism or being nativist, quote unquote. There was a time when it was good to love America. There was a time when it was good to fight for America and speak up for America. We need to defend America, something that our leaders and certainly our president has not done.
Yeah, well said, Alex.
Listen, callers, don't go away. We're
going
to get
away.
To
we'll get your calls. You're listening to Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. That's Truth. Have a question. We have an answer. We'll be back in a second.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Dr. Michael Brown Show, the Line of Fire. Jason Jimenez and yours truly, Alex McFarland. Glad to be with you sitting in for our brother and friend, Dr. Brown. Hey, let's go to the phones.
Yeah.
Who we got here?
We got John. He's traveling through Carlton, Texas. John, welcome to the Line of Fire. What's your question for us?
Thank you. I actually don't have a question. I was just listening to the show, and I actually have something to say regarding the topic that y'all are discussing.
Sure.
Islam is a religion, right? And America is a country. So I don't really see a way that America can come out and say that they can defeat Islam. The only way to defeat Islam is to basically show the people what the truth is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't fight, you know, fate, somebody's fate physically. You have to actually point them to the right direction and kind of show them the truth. And the way Islam is fighting is to basically take out whoever that's carrying the truth or whoever is going to come out and say, this is the truth. And that's basically what's going on by them chasing out the Christians or chasing out anybody that opposes them. So if you were to think about it that way, the only way to really fight it, that's how they're able to really infiltrate the countries. Like, for example, you know, people like the last caller was talking about, you know, they're looking for people, some people are looking for others to tell them what to do and or to tell them what is true. You understand? So they're not really looking to do the research to figure out what the truth is. They just want people to tell them, okay, this is how you do this, this is how you do this. But once they know what the truth is, if somebody comes out and tell them, okay, this is how you're supposed to live. This is the true way to live. There's only one way to heaven. Instead of people coming and kind of bringing all these theories around, you know, that's the only way that I really see Islam being defeated.
Well, and to your point, John, appreciate the call and calling into the show and voicing that concern. I think what you're trying to say is, yeah, America is not trying to defeat Islam. Remember, we are
trying to defeat their evil designs against America.
There's an ideology, and it, again, through the Muslim Brotherhood, through organizations as such like CARE that's demonstrating their terrorist ties through Saudi Arabia and other places in Syria to America and the violence that has occurred since the 90s and the first initial terror attack against the Twin Towers then. And then you have, the ISIS that is growing here. I would say that there's an ideology that, again, that goes against the Constitution. We are a nation that embraces the freedom for people to not only exercise their particular beliefs. In this case, if a Muslim is here and they have a right, their constitutional right, to exercise not only in a physical sense, in a physical location of worship, like a mosque, but they have a right to conscience, that they are not to be hindered or hindered or restricted to exercise that belief, mm-hmm. that they have in Allah and, of course, their sacred documents. So I would say that America is trying to attack Islam, but America as a nation, we have laws. We have the Constitution, and anything that goes against the Constitution that's a direct violation is a responsibility of our federal government and the autonomies of each individual state that's led by, on the executive level, the governor, is to fight against that ideology. I mean, would you agree with that, John?
Yes, I do. I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I figured that's what you meant. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. Go ahead.
Since 1972, 3,110 Americans have been killed by Muslims on American soil in 82 terror attacks. There's one website, thereligionofpeace.com. 1972, 10 members of a local mosque phone in a false alarm and ambush the responding police officers, killing one, injuring three. You know, this goes up through the decades. As recently as, you know, December 2nd, San Bernardino, 14 dead. Chattanooga, Tennessee, 5 dead back in the summertime. A lot of people don't know, in Maryland in 2002, shortly after 9/11, in Maryland, a sniper killed 5 people shooting from a building. You might remember that. And in 2 separate attacks over a 15-hour period, 5 people were killed in Maryland. All in all, there have been 82 terror attacks by Muslims on American soil, American lives, 3,100 people killed. And so we have to do something about this. What I would encourage go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, like, why that hatred? The reason why I feel like that hatred is there is because of the freedom. You understand? The freedom is there because you have choice. You're able to sit down and actually listen to basically what I was going by. Basically, you're able to hear what the truth is when you have that freedom. You know, when you're free to choose light and dark, you'll be able to make that choice. But when they're taking that choice away from you, do you understand where I'm trying to go with this?
Oh, yeah, we do, John. And thank you for the call, and thank you for listening to Line of Fire. We really appreciate your support. We're running out of time, so we want to kind of wrap up this time, Alex, that we had. But along the lines with a lot of you guys have called in and voicing some concern and some questions and some clarification, let us close with a couple things to get some food for thought. And Lord willing, after this week, and when we're back on with you guys next Tuesday and Wednesday, we can continue this conversation. But I want to draw your attention to something and all the things that we're talking about. There was a book that's called the Al-Zarqawi, The Second Generation of Al-Qaeda, written by Fayed Hussein. This book has laid out, catch this, a phase, if you will, of 7 different phases to overtake North America. And so whether you want to talk about this clock boy, you want to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood, you want to talk about the different care organizations that are spread around the country working directly with our FBI, mm-hmm. Working directly with our Attorney General now and before with Eric Holden. But this book charts 7 phases needed in order for Muslims to achieve final victory. And we're seeing it. Phase 1 was the Muslim awakening that took place in 2000. What happened in 2001? 9/11.
Phase 2, and the Pentagon. 184 dead in the Pentagon.
Exactly. Phase 2, opening eyes from 2003 to 2006. Phase 3, arising and standing up. This is in the book, The Second Generation of Al-Qaeda by Fayed Hussein. Arising and standing up in 2007 to 2010. Phase 4, collapse, 2010, 2013. Phase 5, the caliphate in 2013, 2016. Notice phase 6. This is where we're entering the total confrontation, 2016 to 2019, and their final phase in this 20-year agenda, this 20-year goal, if you will, to take over North America. Phase 7 is definitive victory 2020. My friends, we are in phase 6 against this attack, this total confrontation. And our elected officials and many of leaders who are leading churches are refusing to call it what it is. Mm-hmm. And we are asking you, those who support Dr. Michael Brown, those who support us in the ministry, those who support the Line of Fire, you guys give, pray, help us continue to use this ministry around the world to speak truth to a generation that is turning from the Lord. We need to turn back to God.
We do.
We need to turn back to God. Thank you guys for your support. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for your prayers. Jason Menez with my great friend Alex McFarland. What an honor.
You can find us at standstrongministries.org. Standstrongministries, IES.
God bless you guys. Have a great day.